is the William Hill Rugby Union podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Yes, this is the William Hills Rugby Union podcast for the World Cup. I'm Michael Casey and delighted to say that joining me to preview this weekend's action is former English scrum pusher Jeff Probyn. Now, Jeff, I think we should do this like when you take a plaster off a scratch and just kind of do it quickly and get through it. It all went wrong last Saturday, didn't it? And this Saturday will be the final appearance that we'll see for England in the tournament.
Yes. I mean, it's sad, disappointing, but although I did say that Australia would win, which is terrible of me, but I think the reality was that England lost this World Cup against Wales. You can't have 10 points advantage in a game like they did against Wales and then throw it away. That was suicide for them. Coming back against what turned out to be a very, very good Australian side. We knew they were playing some of the best rugby so far in this World Cup tournament. And they put together a good, the idea we were going to destroy their scrum. I think we've lived on that for too long and we needed to play a little bit better than we did. A lot of selections went wrong. Got our back row selection wrong, certainly, trying to compete with the two open sides that Australia had. Just left us looking slow and unfit. So realistically, the best team won last week, the Australians, much as I hate to say it. But now we kick on and we look for a Northern Hemisphere team to beat them and make sure that we get the Northern Hemisphere represented in the final.
Yeah, it certainly was a pretty impressive display from Australia. You highlighted the back row, Hooper, Pocock, Cattell, and of course Perlis Foley really have an impressive game outside half. The whole defeat and of course England's early exit has opened up the question and indeed the betting about Stuart Lancaster's future, and we have got markets now for the next permanent England head coach. Head of the markets is South African national coach Jake White, ahead of some you've got some English Premiership coaches there. Jim Mallander at 6-1. Rob, of course, at Northampton Saints. Rob Baxter at 7-1, who's been with Exeter, of course. And Mike Ford, second favourite at 4-1. Is there any name in particular you'd like to see take the job if Stuart Lancaster is indeed given the old tin tack?
Well, there's the one that no one dare mention, Dean Richards, from the Bloodgate affair. But Dino obviously has a tremendous pedigree as a coach. He took Leicester to Heineken Cup finals. He won the league with them time and time again. If you like, he carried the can for the Bloodgate thing because it was pretty obvious that almost every coach in the Premiership were doing exactly the same thing. But Dino made the terrible mistake. He got caught and it's cast him astride. He's dealt with his punishment. He took it on the chin. He's back with Newcastle now. He's got to be a name that somewhere on a piece of paper at Twickenham they've written his name down because of what he offers and what he potentially could do for an England team. He's shown that he has the quality to be a top-rate coach and manager and has had success. You can't just discount him.
Well, if you don't want to discount him, the rewards are certainly there. Dean Richards is currently in the betting. He's at 33-1. Along with the like of assistant Graham Rowntree and even Bernard Laporte. I'm gonna throw Rob Baxter in there at 7-1. I think that's just because I really like what he's done at Exeter over the last couple of years and really transformed.
Great, you can't argue about that, Michael. He's been the only coach to come up from the second division and actually establish what is a Premiership quality side. He's managed to do it without spending fortunes, without rushing off into the foreign market or whatever. And we've bought for a lot of good youngsters. Henry Slade starts this week for England against Uruguay. Perhaps there's a lot of people who would say that he should have started in a few other games, but he'll get the chance to show what he can do. And, Rob Baxter has done some marvellous things. Can't say, though, personally, I would not like to see Lancaster be fired. I know this sounds a bit of an anathema because, when you look at the results, but I think that for the whole squad, who are a young squad, for Lancaster in particular, who's done really well with that squad, it's a valuable lesson. Losing a World Cup is something that every coach must go through. Clive Woodward did it to go through and win in 2003. Graham Henry did it with New Zealand. So, you know, if you're looking back and you're looking at coaches that have had success, they've also had failure in the past.
Very true. Well, let's focus on this weekend's games then, and we'll go through them chronologically, looking at the home nations and islands chances. And we'll start off up in Newcastle with the Pool B game between Samoa and Scotland. This is a 2:30 kickoff tomorrow. Vern Cotter's lot are 1-4 favourites against Samoa side that have maybe not had the tournament that they would have hoped, and they're out there at 3-1. The handicap's 10 points for Scotland. Good news regarding injuries. They've had a pretty much full bill of health past for the game. Finn Russell and John Hardy, two of the notable inclusions in the squad. Obviously, they made a lot of changes for the South Africa game. They'll be wanting to obviously take this one, you'd imagine, Scotland, and secure up that that second place in Pool B behind South Africa, Jeff.
Yeah, they certainly will. I mean, if Samoa do the unthinkable, then there's a good chance that Japan will take that second slot. So they need to put in a result. And I think they will get it. I think that Samoa have suffered the consequences of having a bit of dispute before this World Cup with their union. Players have not been happy. They haven't actually performed on the field. They've got their own discipline problems. Their own Tuolangi has been banned for 4 weeks. So,
how ridiculous is that, Jeff? And I would have gone for too long, but you're a former pro, obviously, played the game. What do you make of the length of the ban that Alessandro Tuolangi has received for the alleged knee to the head on that carry in his last game?
Well, I think it's a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a disgrace in some ways, because if you look at some of the other things that have gone on and the various bans that have been meted out to various people, you know, one day, one match, one game, 1 week, you know, and suddenly poor old Tuolangi gets a 4 week ban for, you know, something that wasn't really that bad.
No, it certainly didn't seem to be at first light. So, with the betting then, Jeff, do you think that Scotland are good value to win this one by 10 or more points, handicap set at 10? I mean, we've got winning margin lives, of course, and a bet that you do quite often like to play. Where do you sort of set the mark here for Scotland?
Well, I think that I think this will be a close game. I think Samoa will come out all guns blazing. Scotland have improved their discipline, certainly under Cotter, and produce a disciplined displays. They've got a good solid pack, you know, with Dave Denton there at number 8 coming off quite well and playing, carries the ball well for them. Their back line is good, not spectacular, it's got to be said. The only one I think who's really world class in that back line is Stuart Hogg. So I think it may be a bit closer than the 10 points.
Okay, so Samoa plus 10, a recommendation there. If we just have a look through this Scottish backline that he talked about, of course, Stuart Hogg starts at 15. Wingers Tommy Seymour and Sean Maitland, a midfield of Matt Scott and Mark Bennett, with Greg Laidlaw at captain, inside Finn Russell, who's a been past fit. I'm assuming I'm going to the Scottish forwards. But of course, feel free to take a pick from any of the 46 players that could be involved in the evening. Is there any players that you might like for an anytime try or first try scorer, Jeff?
Well, I always go for Stuart Hogg when he looks at this from Scotland, because he is such a mazy runner and a quality attack player as well. He joins the line very well. You've got to look at him as an option. Tommy Seymour as well, playing well at the moment. They'll use Maitland for his bulk and for his power, but the Samoans will look forward to that. They'll look forward to the confrontation. So it's the players that don't look for confrontation that I see as the try scorers, and that's the likes of Stuart Hogg.
Very good. I'm going to add into that the Scottish fly half, Finn Russell. I've been quite impressed with his vision and his way he looks to run the ball out. And not always a great thing, but he does sometimes look to snipe through those gaps. And if he can find a hole in a Samoan backline that we know will shoot up out the line, perhaps could be something there. No prices currently live for the try score betting, but they will be going up shortly.
It's always worth a look at the Gray brothers as well, isn't it? You know, Richie or Johnny Gray, they're always like to be out there carrying the ball. Richie more than John, it has to be said.
Of course, second game of the afternoon then, and you'd argue it's maybe the clash of the day. It's the the game that England kind of hoped that it would be a side fighting for second place, but it's not proved to be the case. It is, of course, Australia taking on Wales at Twickenham. Referee for this game, Craig Joubert. A couple of changes for both sides, with Australia making three from the team that beat England. McMahon comes in for Michael Hooper, who's, of course, suspended for his challenge on Mike Brown. Drew Mitchell in for Rob Horn on the wing, who is injured. And former Exeter chief Dean Mum replaces Rob Simmons in the second row. Wales have made a handful of changes from the side that beat Fiji. Gareth Anscombe making his debut, quite notably. Samson Lee in for Tom Francis at tight head. With regards to the price in this, Jeff, Australia are clear favourites at 4-11. It's 11-5 Wales, the draw at 20-1. How do you call it?
Well, you've got to say that Wales don't have a very good record against Australia.
Very true,
Last 10 or whatever. And Australia have shown that they are playing some very, very good rugby. England dominated Wales in the game against them, and Wales were only kept in the game by foolish penalties that England gave and the fact that they bigger kicked the goals and did so superbly well. And the fact that they played for 80 minutes. Now, that could be a key point. It's good to see that Wales have brought in Tuparik to play with Warburton to challenge the Australians at the breakdown. Obviously, losing Hooper to that to being
a Russia blood to the head, shall we say?
The sighting officer said that he shoulder charged Brown off the ruck, didn't he?
Personally, I think it's considerably worse than the Tuolangi challenge, if you want to call it that.
Well, it was, but it's only a one-match ban, isn't it? Hooper's out. Having said that, you know, it's interesting that he got cited and yet Sam Burgess didn't for that awful...
Yeah, I mean, we've seen an awful lot of intervention in the officiating this tournament, and yet the consistency seems to be as erratic as ever, so make about what you will.
That's what you did kind of think of. I think also the fact that the Welsh have had to rearrange all their back line. You know, George Norcom moving into the centre there. They put Liam Williams on the wing, who obviously can play winger and is a good player. You kind of get the feeling that this Welsh side just hasn't got enough continuity in its form to beat an Australian side who played well together. You saw them last week against England. They absolutely ripped the English defence apart. The try that Foley scored was fantastic. You know, the interpassing, interplay between the players. They no longer have a weak scrum that you can take advantage of. So Wales have had to put out what they consider to be their best scrum, with Samson Lee coming in there, with Paul James as well, and Baldwin, to put up a bit of bulk, simply just to hold the Australian scrum. The Australian scrum did a job on England last week. Wales would have taken note of that. But it's the Australian backs who are outstanding, you know, and you've got to say that I think that this is going to be another game that I don't think Australia will have a hangover from that England game. They will want to go out and win this, and I think Checker's put his best side on the field.
Yep, I think it's pretty hard to pick too many faults with the Australia side on that if they can perform like they did last week. And of course, you referenced it, but Wales with a glut of injuries. Gareth Anscombe in the squad is effectively, you know, third choice 15, if that. Lee Halfpenny, of course, lost in the warm-up. The half-back pairing, whilst Dan Bigger has been good, is far from what they might have expected it to be at the start of the tournament. So, with regards to the betting then, the handicap is 7 points, Jeff. So, do you think that Australia could take this one by more than one converted score?
Well, they did it against England. I mean, I thought it'd be one converted score against England, but I wasn't expecting Owen Farrell to get sin-bin, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, Australia would have watched that England game and taking it on board, particularly Sean Edwards, the defensive coach, would have aligned these. I've got to be honest, I think Australia are good for between 10 and 15.
Okay, so on the handicap betting then, Australia -7 is there at 10 to 11. Winning margin live, you can back Australia between 11 to 15 points, and that's a very generous 5 to 1. There is, of course, an extra incentive on this game, if you read into it, because, of course, the winner of Pool A, which will be determined from this game, will in all likelihood avoid South Africa and play Scotland in the quarterfinals, so that's got to be filtered into play. Given the performances that we saw last week then, and talking about a try scorer, Jeff, I guess Bernard Foley's got to be considered at fly half.
Well, Foley's got to be considered, you know, although he will be marked, you can see that. I think you've got to look at Genia, Will Genia, because he, you know, he's a guy who does make little sniping runs. He's a possibility. Israel Folau, he almost crossed the line in the first instance, didn't he? So, you know, they're the sort of guys you're going to look at. I think I personally would go for Folau because I kind of like the way he runs and
real
the way he plays.
Isn't he?
I love these fullbacks coming into the line.
And also, I mean, he's always going to provide a threat in the air if they've ever put those big looming kicks corner as well. So the final game of Saturday then, and I think it's going to be quite nice for a change to be able to talk about England hopefully winning a game, although let's not get too carried away just yet. But they are playing Uruguay. They are 1-150 favourites. Uruguay 33-1, the draw 40-1. The handicap is 58 points. Now, Stuart Lancaster has made 9 changes to the side all told. Andy Goode comes into the side. There's a strong Exeter contingent with Jack Noll and Henry Slade, as you mentioned earlier in the podcast. Ford's back in. Danny Kerr starts at 9. Makabunapola starts at loosehead. Haskell got himself off Twitter and is back in the team. Nick Easter's playing, and of course mentioned Owen Farrell, who's starting but he's moved to centre. And the handicap is 58 points, Jeff, which is an awful lot, but England have got to get something positive out of this World Cup, haven't they? And surely the way to do that is by thrashing Uruguay at the Manchester City Stadium on Saturday night.
Well, I think they will thrash Uruguay. I think that, you know, this is by far a better balanced side. Still not happy with Tom Young's keeping this hook up. I see Tom Young's very much as a guy who comes on in the last 15 to 20 minutes at the end of the game and is an impact reserve. I would have preferred to see Jamie George start this game and be given the chance to show what he can do as a proper hooker. The back line now for England has an interesting and exciting quality about it. You know, you've got young players playing who have shown great ability with the ball in hand. I would not be surprised if this was not another one of these 100 and whatever points to England against the Georgia side, who, you know, quite frankly, they're amateurs. They struggle from week to week. They've put in a good couple of good performances, but the reality is that they're nowhere near. This will be a confidence booster for England.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you there. So 58 points, the handicap. We're fancying England to go over that against Uruguay today. The try scorer betting will be available very soon, but I'd imagine the principles in the market for England to be quite short, but perhaps you could look at backing a player to score 2 or more, or maybe even a hat-trick. Are there any players, maybe notable inclusions in the side, Jeff, that catch your eye for a try score? I have to say I'm drawn to Henry Slade.
I'm drawn to Henry Slade as well. And Jack. I think Jack's quite a powerful runner with the ball. He's got good defensive qualities. Anthony Watson, obviously, we know that he'll probably score a try. You know, it's probably easier to try, well, harder, let's put it this way, it'd probably be a better bet to find someone who won't score a try out of that back line, you know. You've got to expect that George Ford will score a try as well. You know, he does some great sniping runs. Danny Kerr as well likes to run off the back of things. The only reason I'm not choosing Alex Goode is because Alex Goode doesn't have a lot of pace. He's a very good footballer, but doesn't have a lot of pace. So
perhaps a provider a little bit more often.
More of a provider than an actual finisher. Someone to score a hat-trick, well, you've got to go for Watson, haven't you?
Yeah, he's been one of the few shining lights in the relatively dark tournament for the Red Roses. But I mean, maybe even look at a front row forward or
you lot. Tom Youngs, you've got to say Tom Youngs could score a try. He as an ex-centre, he's quick, he's strong, he runs around like a dynamo all game long. Broken field play is phenomenal. It's only his tight play, set piece play, that I think lets him down slightly. You know, the fact that he can't strike for the ball and hook is a bit of a damning statement for a hooker.
It's not great, is it? But hopefully, should be a more generous price in the betting. Just we'll have a look at the winning margin live, Jeff, because I know you're anticipating quite a big score, and if you can manage to get this one right, the rewards are certainly there. I mean, England to win it by, let's have a look, 71-75 points is 9-1.
That's a worth a bet. That is worth a bet, definitely.
Although, yeah, big prices to be had there. And we'll move on to Sunday's game and discuss probably the certainly the hottest contested with regards to what we're expecting in a with regards to the outcome and what we expect and what we're seeing on the prices. It's France versus Ireland in Pool D. Now, there is an awful lot resting on this, of course, because essentially the winner of this game, both teams are 3 wins from 3, will in all likelihood face Argentina rather than the All Blacks. So there is incentive enough right there, isn't there, Jeff?
And there is indeed. And, you know, there is actually, there is an All Black camp that's screaming for France to win this game, because France do have a habit of knocking the All Blacks out of World Cup tournaments.
Yeah, they've got the sign over them, haven't they? And
they
They probably should have won the World Cup final 4 years ago against them.
Well, you know, The All Blacks have beaten them in 2 finals, but they've both been very close and slightly some dubious decisions from referees. So the All Blacks will be hoping that that France win this game. Although I have to say, I don't think they will. I think that Ireland have the sign over France. The last 4 games have been 2 wins to Ireland and 2 draws. Now, that's an interesting statistic, because it looks like these two teams are very, very evenly matched when it comes to these games. I don't know what the odds are for a draw, but I wouldn't mind putting a sneaky tenner on that.
Well, the price is just about to drop onto the website, but I've been told that we're going to be looking at Ireland at 4-6, France 11-8, and the draw will be around about 20-1. So if you stick a tenner on that, Jeff, that's certainly your Saturday night paid for.
It's my Saturday night pay for, and I think it could be. You know, all their games are very close. You look over the history, you'll see France and Ireland, there's never more than about 3 to 7 points in it. So one score, basically. And as I say, the 2 out of the last 4 have been draws. So I'd see that very much on offer.
Yes, and as we say, we're still waiting for team news. This is, of course, the last game of the weekend. But usual suspects likely to be there or thereabouts, threatening the line for both sides. Could you pick a potential try scorer? I know, for looking at the Irish side, would be expecting the likes of Zeebo, Tommy Bowe to be around there. If looking at France, perhaps the likes of Bryce Doolan, Wesley Fofana would be contenders, or perhaps even a forward for either side. Jamie Heaslip seems
Robbie Henshaw, he's got to be in there as well. You've got to give him a look at. You know, he's talented inside centre. Bastereau, for the French. I don't see Bastereau scores many tries, but he does create a lot of opportunities for people around him.
Give me one. Your favourite try scorer for the game, Jeff.
My favourite try scorer for the game. I'd like to pick the new guy, Grosso, the
winger,
new winger for France. He looked very impressive in his debut, so he's going to be an exciting guy for the French.
Fantastic, and we'll just go and have a look at the outright markets, because obviously it's a bit of a clearer picture now as the group stages draw to their conclusion. But we are still betting on who's going to win the tournament. I'm going to put it out there, just on the back of what we've seen, and I know England were involved, so perhaps it skews your overall view, but are Australia worth looking at 3-1?
Well, they are, but you know, I think Australia have certainly improved, dramatically improved over the past year, you know, under Checker, and they've got their game together, they've got their right people there. But I'm still going to stick with my South Africa. I started with South Africa at the start of this.
I bet you were feeling great after they got beaten in Brighton.
I was feeling great. I think that South Africa will be the first team to lose a game and win the Cup, simply because losing to Japan has really given them a kick up the old Jacksie and made them start thinking about the game. And you look at how they've been playing, they've improved literally game on game as they've played in this competition. So I still stick with them as my favourites to win. I think that they're just about got the right reasons, the right intensity. They play the Australians all the time. They play the New Zealanders all the time. They don't hold any fear for the South Africans. So they're still my little bet.
Fantastic. The South Africans available to win the World Cup at 7-1.
Oh, they've gone down a bit. They were 8-1.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.